Welcome everyone to The Enthusiast Life. I am your host, Mark Turcotte. It is Monday, July 20th, 2020, and I'm so glad each and every one of you have decided to make me a part of your day. Well, we got a good one in store for you today. Got some very interesting topics, but here at the top of the show, I do want to throw a question out to you first. And that is, because I want to get some responses, because here through, as we go through this week, as we lead to the big Microsoft press event this Thursday on July 23rd, each day here, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, I want to talk about some of the best games for the Xbox platform. So Tuesday, we're going to talk Xbox. Wednesday, we're going to talk 360. And Thursday's episode will actually be about the Xbox One. And then Friday, we'll kind of go through everything they talked about on Thursday. So please leave me either an email at theenthuselife@gmail.com, or I'm going to put a thread up over on Twitter at Mark Turk. That's M-A-R-K-T-U-R-C. Let me know in there, what are some of your favorite original Xbox games? That's a question for today. What are your favorite original Xbox games? Now, when you think about that, of course, you know, I'm not just talking first-party games. When you think about the original Xbox, what are those games that you remember? Obviously, I'm sure Halo is going to be an answer. But even if it's just Madden, if Madden was your game on the Xbox, then that's what it is. Let me know what your games are. And we're going to be talking about those tomorrow on the episode. But like I said, this week, everybody's kind of a buzz right now about what's happening with Xbox. We got their big event happening this Thursday. And we had some interesting conversations here, or quotes, kind of over the last couple days here over this the weekend. And first, we'll just start with Microsoft, since we're talking about Microsoft. And that was kind of just that reiteration, you know, coming from Phil Spencer, the man who is the head of Xbox, saying that there will be no first-party exclusives for the Series X really until the next couple years, that all their games will be cross-gen. And of course, you know, people just still are just baffled by this. They don't understand why is Xbox doing that. Personally, I'm not one of those people. Like, to me, I'm kind of looking at, as we enter into this generation, Microsoft and Sony are taking very, very different approaches to it, because we also had this weekend in an interview kind of talking to Jeff Keighley, we had Eric Lempel, who's kind of the global marketing head for PlayStation, say kind of the opposite. He said that they believe in new generations and that the PlayStation 5 is a brand new generation and they want to evolve every part of that experience. So any game that's made for the PlayStation 5, specifically those exclusives, are only on that platform and can't be played anywhere else. He kind of goes on to say that, you know, in many cases, we can't take everybody with us from previous consoles into that new generation. You need new hardware. You need new devices to experience what these developers want you to experience. So, you know, there you go. I mean, we saw over the weekend the fanboys coming out of the woodwork between, you know, Sony and Microsoft and everybody just kind of fighting and battling. And hey, it's the console wars. That's just kind of the way of the land and the way it's always been. But I think people need to look at the fact that really Microsoft is approaching it different this year or this time. Microsoft, when you look at back at them just as a company in general, they have always been a software company slash services company more so than a hardware. They really weren't a hardware company until really the late 90s and started getting into the game of you know, making their kind of exclusive like keyboards and things like that. You know, they didn't make computers. They just made sure that their software ran on every computer. That's what led to the rise of Microsoft. Bill Gates was basically saying like, hey, just put Windows on every computer and it'll work great. And like, that's what I see happening right now with Xbox is they lost last generation because they doubled down on the hardware. That didn't really go well for them. So they probably went back to the drawing board and said, you know what? Let's do what we've always done, is just be that software, that service company. Let's just make great games and let people play them on whatever they want to play them on. And that's the approach that they're taking right now. You know, they're saying, hey, if you want those games to run as great as they can possibly run and look as great as they can possibly look, buy the Series X. Otherwise, hey, just buy the game and have fun with it, play with it. So I think from a consumer standpoint, in terms of, you know, doing the right thing by the consumer, that is a very consumer-centric plan. And I think in the long run, it's really going to help Microsoft. I mean, that's why there's Game Pass. That's why they're just giving away all their first party games, because they don't care where you play it. They just want you to be buying into that ecosystem. Then they know they have you. Kind of the same sense as like the streaming services. They want you to subscribe. They give you the free subscription and then you forget to cancel and then they just keep charging you. And honestly, it's probably what Microsoft wants you to do for your video games. Same thing. Subscribe to Game Pass Ultimate. You know, we'll give you all these months for free or upgrade you like they did last year. But then you're going to forget to, you know, cancel it. And you're just going to keep keep continuing on. But by that point, you're in it and you're just enjoying it, whether you have an Xbox One, whether you have an Xbox One X, whether you have an Xbox One S, whether you're playing through your PC, or you're doubling down and getting the new Series X. They don't care because you're in it. And that's a steady stream of income for them from the consumer. Now, on the flip side of that, as a gamer, you know, we look at what Sony is doing and we see these games that are built specifically for the PlayStation 5. And in this conversation that Eric Lempel had, this interview with Jeff Keighley, they talked about Ratchet and Clank, A Rift Apart. And he says, you know, when you look at a game like Ratchet, we've talked about a lot of different features, you know, and they're mentioning, you know, having the SSD and that's something that just makes that loading time so much faster. And he goes, you know, it isn't necessarily about the faster loading, but if you take a developer like Insomniac and they find a way to say, okay, well, what can we do using that technology gameplay-wise? That's what Ratchet is really doing. And if people didn't catch that, go watch that trailer again. You're literally jumping between worlds that are pretty much seamlessly, instantaneously rendering these new locations that you're able to then jump into through these portals. It's kind of incredible when you think about it, like the way that they're able to have that happen. That's why there is no loading, and not having loading allows that gameplay mechanic to be there. In any other game, you're stuck at a loading screen, or have how games have been doing it today. You're slowly crawling through a crawl space and you see your character slowly going through. That's all loading. Or, you know, the classic standing on an elevator or waiting for the door to unlock, seeing the thing spin on the door. That's all loading in the background, where the new technology of the PlayStation 5 allows a developer like Insomniac to say, with no loading, what can we do? And when you see Ratchet jumping to these different worlds, that's amazing. So games like that are not possible. So pushing the gaming medium forward is Sony's take, is they say, hey, we need this new hardware, because for developers to push the gaming medium forward, they need to be able to utilize this technology. I see both sides of that. And I think a lot of players or gamers out there who are looking at this console war aren't looking at it that way. In the end, we all win. Let Sony do their thing. Let Microsoft do their thing too. You know, Microsoft has bought up so many different studios, and every single one of those studios are amazing, and their previous games are incredible. So I am just as confident that every game that they're going to come out with that will run on the original Xbox One and run on the top tier Series X are still going to be incredible. You know, we don't have to always be pushing the video game medium forward. But it is nice to have a company say, we want to do that. And that's what Sony's going to do with their games on the PlayStation 5. I think my advice, and I've been kind of sticking to this to many people, if you want to play all the games, is either one, hold off, because we don't still know what that launch title is for the PS5, or just go with the PS5, even if you are a huge Microsoft person. And I know a lot of people want those games running the best. Believe me, I have a feeling later on this week when we see Halo Infinite, I may be eating some of those words and saying, like, man, I got to get that Series X. Because I don't know, my computer, it's all right. I got a 1070 in there. Every game up to this point runs pretty damn good. But I know I'm not going to be able to run probably Infinite as well on my PC as it's going to run on that Series X. So I know just the Halo fanboy in me is going to want that. But for me personally, I think the 5 would probably be the way to go if I was getting a console this fall. I'm still, actually, believe it or not, I've talked about it before, I'm still kind of on the fence because I look at all those other games I could play if I don't double down and buy a console. But, you know, I just think it's interesting, and I think a lot of people are missing the fact that this approach is not the same approach we've seen for every other console launch before. And part of it is really due to the fact that Microsoft is just going back in the way that just made them money in the past. Be a service software company and just let people run things on whatever. And that's back to the pedigree of Windows and Windows Office. You know, I think it's super smart for Microsoft to do that. And it's okay to have both of these companies kind of approach it this way. There's no reason to go out and be petty and fight and take your sides and throw your, you know, flag or sword in the ground. Like, come on, what are we doing here? That was something I saw all over social media this week, and it just kind of just, I don't know, was rubbing me the wrong way. And I think it was just kind of wild looking at, you know, kind of the stories that way. Shifting gears here, I do want to talk just a little bit more about just some games that I played this past weekend. On the last episode we did, on Friday's episode, I talked about the Paragon fan-made or new game coming out, trying to revitalize it, called Fault. I did get into Fault this weekend. Bought it on Steam. I bought in for the $15 pack they have up there. It's got a ways to go. Game has a lot of work that needs to be done. Believe it or not, I kind of hate to say this because I do want to support the teams that are doing this because I know they're putting a lot of effort into it. I did get a refund through Steam because I just was like, you know what? This is super early. I got to see more from them as to what they're going to do. And eventually the game will be free to play. And I know buying into early access, that's part of it. But the way Steam, they got a policy, 2 hours, you can actually get a refund. If you don't play over 2 hours, you can get a refund. I played about an hour and a half. That got me through three matches. And at that point I was just like, no, I'm out. I'll come back at another point. I was lucky enough, however, to get a closed alpha key from the community manager for the team making another one of these that ran this weekend as well, called Predecessor. Predecessor, on the other hand, is honestly like the complete opposite of Fault. It's much faster. It plays a lot more like the original Paragon. It is fantastic. Like right now where I stand, if I only had to pick one, Predecessor is the way to go. That team is they've pretty much created or recreated the Paragon experience. Sure, there's not as many items. All that stuff isn't there. All the heroes aren't there, but the map runs great. It runs smooth. It feels well. That was one of the things about Fault is like, it just seemed kind of janky. Your character seemed floaty when you would hit somebody. It just didn't feel like you were hitting them. Predecessor just plays and looks fantastic. It's much more polished. So the team behind that, for right now, that's kind of where I'm banking my cards. Still in closed alpha, but if you are a Paragon player, I definitely recommend you check Predecessor out first. Don't buy into Fault yet. Give them some time. I think, you know, hey, I think in the end, all these teams are going to be able to pull it off. But, you know, my fear again is because we have so many of these. I mean, there's Overprime. There's another one called Metabuff, or maybe that's the team that's behind it. But it's just like there's all these teams building these Paragon clones or offshoots, and like they all can't win. We only need one. We can't have four. We're already having the player base, you know, wasn't always that big to begin with, and now you're going to splinter it 3 to 4 different places. That's my only concern, is that in the end, none of these are going to succeed. But right now, Predecessor is definitely the one that's pulling it off. Friday, we did have two big launches. We had Paper Mario, The Origami King, which I did not get to play at all. Didn't get into. Wish I did, honestly. I've been kind of on the fence about picking that one up. I haven't played a Paper Mario game really since, I guess, the Wii U game. I did play that game. What was that? Color Splash, I think that was. This game just looks awesome. The charm of it looks really neat. Ghost of Tsushima, however, though, is the big game that launched for the PlayStation 4, and it's kind of the big swan song for this console as we lead into the PlayStation 5. I did not pick it up again just because where the time is for me, I don't think I'm quite there. I know Derek over at Game Insider is doing a review. So when that goes live, I will talk about it here on the show. And maybe I'm thinking about trying to get him on just to talk about the game itself, because I think that'd be kind of cool to get people in here to kind of talk about some of these bigger releases as we kind of do these shows every day. But interesting thing, and I don't know if a lot of people read game reviews anymore, or if you watch reviews, or if even review scores even mean anything to anyone anymore. But Metacritic is now making users wait 36 hours before posting reviews for a video game. And this kind of started with The Last of Us 2. It was just completely obliterated in the user scores on Metacritic. And part of that was just people not being happy with certain representation in the game, the way some story choices have gone. When you guys do listen to the new Patreon episode, I did talk about that with one of our Discord members and kind of his thoughts on that. So, but, you know, the way Metacritic works is it kind of aggregates not only the press review scores, and that gives it one score, but then the users, anybody can go on and just say, hey, I'm just going to review this. And those open up like the minute that the game is launched, like immediately. So what they're doing now is creating this waiting period so that people can't just immediately just destroy the game. And here's what they had to say. They said, we recently implemented the 36-hour waiting period for all user reviews in our game section to ensure our gamers have time to play these games before writing their reviews. This new waiting period for user reviews has been rolled out across Metacritic's game section and was based on data-driven research and with input of critics and industry experts. Now, in the end, at that 36 mark, are people still going to go in and review bond these games? Hate to say it, yes. But I think it is at least right, especially, I mean, you know, when you have a game that is a 60-hour game, not that Ghost of Tsushima is. I mean, I've heard reports, 40 to 50 hours, that's a lot. How within an hour a user who clearly has not played the game can go in there and leave a review? Or even The Last of Us, whether the story leaked or not, someone should not be able to review it within an hour, right? That just should not happen. It's one thing for movies when, you know, you have all theaters kind of at different times, whether or not people are still review bombing movies like they've done with the Star Wars films, having not seen them. I'm sure it happens over there. But games are a little bit different because games are a little bit longer. And for those to immediately go out there, and we know how just locked down games are, it's just not right. So I think it is cool that they are doing that. There should be no outrage or anything from anyone because of this. But again, it goes back to, what does a review score even matter? I mean, I've been someone of kind of saying lately that, you know, I think reviews have their place. But I think that, like, the Twitch world and even just YouTube or even just podcasts talking about games more out loud have really kind of led to I don't want to say my push away from reviews, but when I go to a review, I'm looking at, do I know the person who wrote this review? Do I know other games that they like? Like, for me, that's what I've started to do with my reviews. Like, if I go to IGN, let's say, and I look at a review over there, if it's a reviewer that I know that I've maybe heard on a podcast or I've watched some of his other reviews and kind of how he's rated other games, I take that review score more in consideration rather than just some random person who I don't know who they are giving a game a 9 or a 10. I don't know what type of games they like. And I think that's kind of where now, having Twitch and having all these things, if you find somebody that you gravitate to and you have the same likes, you'll take their opinion or their review more into consideration, right? I think that really just leads to a lot more trust when it comes to those things. And so, you know, Metacritic is cool because it kind of aggregates it all, so you can kind of see like a general overview, but it doesn't seem like it really is a true accurate description of some of the reviews for some of these games, and especially the user scores. I never even look at the user scores at all because I could care less what other people, because, you know, I mean, they're doing this because that just happens all the time. Like, it just happens all the time. The fact that anybody can go in and review a game is crazy. It's cool what Steam does. Steam will show you how many hours a person reviewing it has played that game. See, that's cool. Now, unfortunately, there's no way for Metacritic to do that, but Steam will say, hey, you know, if someone goes in there and says, this game is trash, blah, 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 and then it says they played 30 minutes or under an hour, you're like, okay, well, you know, they're sitting here trying to review this 50-hour RPG. They played 1 hour of it. Don't take that review into consideration, you know? So I think that's cool that Steam does that. Unfortunately, Metacritic has no way to do that. So they can't do that. But kind of interesting. I think that they're doing that. I do want to talk a little bit about the delay of new Destiny 2 expansion. Of course, Beyond Light was set to drop here this September. Bungie has announced that it is now coming November 10th, 2020. I had a lot of people kind of coming to me asking, like, hey, what do you think of this? You know, what do you think that they're delaying this? I mean, any delay, unfortunately, is usually a good delay. It means that gives them more time to polish, more time for them to work on things. In this time right now, obviously, game development is extremely hard with COVID and people just being remote. So this is fine. Like, anybody that is upset by this, you're out of your mind. Like, give Bungie as much time as they can to polish this and make it right, especially now that they're independent. So their team is not as big, or they don't have the amount of assets that they had kind of with Activision backing them, for better or worse. You know, so I think it's a good thing. And, you know, it makes it where now, you know, a lot of those games that were set to come around there. I mean, the one thing I kept saying in our Discord chat to everybody is like, hey, Marvel Avengers comes out beginning of September. That gives us more time now to play Avengers and spend with it. If you had Avengers and, you know, a week or two later you had this dropping, the population is going to go away. So now people can go in, play the Avengers, and have a good time. Like, that to me, and anytime these games are getting separated, I love it. Now, one issue here, we had Cyberpunk, I think, is coming in November, as well as Assassin's Creed Valhalla. So that's going to put a little wrinkle kind of in the wrench. I think this is going to get out of the gate first, because I think what Cyberpunk and Assassin's Creed are like the 17th, so like a week later. So, you know, this will give me time to play through those story missions, kind of play through that beat, but I don't see this becoming the hobby that it once was for a while, because I'm going to be jumping into those other games about a week later. So, you know, I don't know, take that for what it is. Maybe it's a good thing or a bad thing for some players out there. But let's shift gears away from video games for a little bit. And I didn't talk about this at all. I meant to talk about this Friday. And that's that Star Wars The Bad Batch has been announced. This is an all-new animated series coming exclusively to Disney Plus in 2021. And if you watched those final episodes of The Clone Wars, you were exposed to the Bad Batch in their episodes. And they're basically this kind of ragtag group of stormtroopers who we got to see. Each one kind of has their own little skill that makes them, you know, and this is kind of how they phrase it, which makes them extraordinarily effective soldiers and a formidable crew. They're kind of in this post-Clone War era. And here's what they say. They said, giving new and existing fans the final chapter of Star Wars, The Clone Wars has been our honor at Disney Plus, and we are overjoyed by the global response to this landmark series. While The Clone Wars may have come to its conclusion, our partnership with the groundbreaking storytellers and artists at Lucasfilm Animation is only beginning. We are thrilled to bring Dave Filoni's vision to life with the next adventures of the Bad Batch. Now, this is going to take part, I guess, supposedly right after The Clone Wars. They're going to find their way in a rapidly changing galaxy in the immediate aftermath of The Clone Wars. So I think that's kind of cool. We're going to kind of get a glimpse into what happened like immediately after that, and what did the clones, how were they able to kind of function, you know, after that. We've only seen kind of glimpses of that kind of through like Rebels and that. So I think this is going to be, especially because we'll be there like immediately after with this series. I think that's awesome. And you know, you could tell kind of in the Bad Batch episode that you could tell, you know, there was something more there. There was definitely going to be a backstory, whether it was through an animated series, which honestly, I didn't think we were going to get that. I mean, I figured we were going to get novels, probably a comic series. But I'm super excited for this. I know anybody who's enjoyed the Clone Wars, I know more Clone Wars is definitely a good thing. I mean, just by the response of those, the final season. And of course they wrapped it up just in fantastic fashion. And now still knowing Dave Filoni is at the helm of this. We can't go wrong. This just can't go wrong. It's going to be great. It's a Star Wars fan. I know this is going to be something very special that I can't wait to see. And at some point here, I need to have somebody on so we can talk about those final episodes, I think, of The Clone Wars, because that's something that, you know, I really haven't talked about. I haven't been able to kind of dish on that. I know Chris hadn't watched it, so we weren't doing that on the old Enthusiast Life, and I didn't talk about it anywhere. So I definitely got to get somebody on soon to talk about that. Well, guys, that's going to do it for today's episode. Again, email me, theenthuselife@gmail.com, or go and look for that tweet a little bit later today on my Twitter feed, at Mark Turk, MarkTurc. What are some of your favorite original Xbox games? That's what I want to know, because that's what I want to talk about pretty much every week. So tomorrow or every day, Tuesday, we're going to be talking about the original Xbox. Wednesday, we're going to be talking about the 360. And Thursday, we'll be talking about the Xbox One. And then Friday, we'll be wrapping up that whole big Xbox event on Thursday. So until then, everybody, thank you again, of course, here for tuning into the show and making me a part of your day. I mentioned if you want to help support the show, you can find the link to the Patreon down below. It gets you access to our Patreon episode, gets you a chance to be on that episode. And the biggest part, you get access to the exclusive Patreon-only Discord for The Enthusiast Life. We love talking to everybody over there, and Chris is still involved in that. So if you want to get in, chat with us, chat with the amazing community we made over there, you can find that link down below. So until next time, everybody, thank you so much for tuning in. Catch you later.